Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Vice President of the James Beard Foundation. And every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we have a conversation about taste, hence the name. Taste, in the broadest sense, that is. We're talking about food, really, and food culture. And as I was saying to one of our guests today on this interesting show where we're going to be talking about the taste of hospitality, I think taste is something that is not always addressed when we talk about food, and you can't get away from talking about food or seeing it or reading it or whatever. But really, the question of how taste affects our understanding and appreciation of food, I think, is what we're here to discuss. Or at least that's my project here on Taste Matters. And as I said, today we're talking about the taste of hospitality. And by that, I mean something, you know, in the current iteration of food. In fact, we're sitting here at Roberta's, which is a wonderful restaurant with great food and a very unique perspective on hospitality, I think, and a changing, something that represents the change in the perspective on hospitality. I wanted to talk to some people who are masters of an older or more traditional idea of what it means to create an incredible environment and sort of old school hospitality. And so we're talking today with two people representative of the Relais and Chateaux Association of Restaurants and Hotels around the world. I'm welcoming in the studio Chef Mark Ladner, who is the chef of Del Posto here in New York. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
Really pleasure to have you outside the beautiful environs that you have in West Chelsea, part of Mario Batali's restaurant group, but a very unique and very plush, almost lavish experience. And on the phone, we're being joined by Jonathan Gushu, who's the chef of what might be considered a more traditional Relais and Chateaux, a beautiful inn, a stunningly beautiful inn just outside of Toronto in Cambridge, Ontario, called Langdon Hall. Welcome, Jonathan.
How are you, Mitchell? It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm good. I wish you were really here, but I don't blame you for not wanting to leave the cushy environs that is Langdon Hall. So I thought I'd start with you guys because we're talking a lot. I mean, especially here in Roberta's, people are very excited about the casualness of food and how accessible quote unquote food has become and how you don't have to dress up or be fancy or do anything when you go out to eat. But both of you represent a slightly different take on what's gone on in food. And I wonder if you could just address where you fit into the current conversation, current delicious conversation with what each of you is doing. Let's start with you, Mark.
Well, in terms of, I guess, guest expectation, when you're dealing with fine dining in the modern sense, it is admittedly countercultural right now.
to have fine dining in an sort of with tablecloths.
Yeah. It's not something that most people are interested in right now or really hold any value in.
Really?
Amenities seem to have sort of fallen by the wayside, and people realize that they can have great, incredibly delicious dining experiences without the trappings of service. And, you know, it's somewhat disappointing, but also it's an interesting challenge, you know, to try to reinstill uh-huh. some of these values.
And yet, I mean, I've been to your place and it's packed on a weeknight. So,
sure.
So people, there's some appreciation for something.
I mean,
there
will always be wealthy people that want to be treated well.
Do you agree with that, Jonathan?
I totally agree. And I know exactly what Mark's saying. I mean, our division of the industry now is facing some trials or issues or stumbling blocks that just to try and get people in again, just with that perception of like our style of restaurant sometimes you know has to be a special occasion, which is unfortunate. But I mean, I think with, you know, especially with Relais and Chateaux, I mean, where it was built on hospitality, and I think that's what it'll always will always bring people in is the experience, and it's the overall experience, and that's one thing. I mean, I firmly believe, though, we'll always be there.
Right. And I'm curious about this idea of the perception of value in one of these experiences, because is it really the people, I wonder, who are changing, or is it media and the press who have moved on and think that it's really cool now? Because ultimately, I mean, if I go have dinner at Momofuku Ko, it's costing me the same or probably less than if I have lunch at Del Posto or a meal at Langdon Hall. And yet there's this perception that all of these other things, the tablecloths and the 12 pieces of flatware and the beautiful dishes, are more intimidating in some way. But the reality is, in fact, you get more value in an environment where you've paid for all of those things than sitting on a plywood bench in a bar
Absolutely.
Without anything on the walls.
Yeah.
So what,
they can't be evaluated equally. It's really not fair.
Right.
It's a completely different type of experience.
No, I think too. I think you hit the nail on the head, because it is all perception. And because I think I noticed that. I mean, Del Posto was, I think, $39 for lunch. I mean, and that's outstanding. And I mean, especially for what you're getting, and what you'll always get is you will get that skilled service and that controlled environment, and you know almost for sure you're going to get a great experience.
And $12 worth of amenity per person.
The only issue is that, you know, in people's heads, they think they have to, I think they feel, a lot of them feel that they can't relax, and they have to dress up, and they have to act a certain way, and you know, be of a certain standard to be going to a lot of these places, which is unfortunate.
And it's also untrue.
It is untrue.
Right.
It is untrue.
I mean, one of the beauties, I think, of almost playing grown up is that you get to surround yourself with beautiful. You can surround yourself with beautiful things, and restaurants have always been these places, I think, where people, even without the means to sort of live their lives surrounded by these sorts of things for that moment, for that special 3 hours or 2 hours, or even if it's just a quick lunch for an hour and a half, get to feel like they're part of a different world.
The whole point is extravagant comfort. I mean, that's what we're trying to sell.
And so what are the elements of extravagant comfort? Like, what to you makes up the experience of a meal at Del Posto, besides just the wonderful food that you are responsible for directly in the kitchen?
You have time, you have space, you have knowledgeable, congenial staff, you have crystal, linen, silver, porcelain, giant baskets of warm bread.
I'm salivating thinking about it.
I don't know. The casualization of society doesn't necessarily place as much value on these things today. I mean, hopefully it will change. I'm sure it will. I mean, as everyone knows, it's all cyclical.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily feel like a special occasion, although it's nice to pamper yourself with a long leisure lunch.
Right.
You know?
And
a comfortable chair.
A comfortable chair, indeed, with a back on it.
Imagine
even
that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'll pay another $3 my amenity for a back on a chair, just because I'm getting old, I guess. But I'm fascinated because, of course, I love all restaurants. I mean, I like to eat on the street at a truck, and all experiences. That's not quite a restaurant, and I think that there's a place for everything. And yet, as we move towards the hipster off Main Street idea, we're sort of moving away from these certain values which you suggest. But on the other hand, I also think an interesting piece of it is that chefs are discovering the artisanal qualities of the work they do. Everyone's making their own preserves and their charcuterie and their whatever. And these experiences represent a different type of artisanship. You know, like linen things don't just happen, or beautiful painted porcelain, you know, represent years of tradition. Jonathan, can you tell me a little bit about when you're thinking about what you're cooking, does the environment that you're in impact what you would do if you had a different type of restaurant? Would you be making different food?
Oh, I think for sure. I mean, you'd be, again, a different type of restaurant. The restaurant, you know, leads you in the direction of where your food is going to be and ultimately end up. And, I mean, you think about how the guest is going to be experiencing, how they're going to be served, and, you know, how they're going to be in enjoying their dining experience. So really it all, I mean, even how they're going to eat it reflects on the food that's being prepared.
Say a little bit more about that. Don't we just take a fork and put it in our mouth? How else do you eat it?
I think, but I mean, the way you would eat, I mean, even if you go back to, you know, a pepper steak with, you know, with you know, made tableside with a lovely sauce and fried chicken. I mean, there's, you know, one it's, you know, you're covered in grease, and then the other in, you know, which doesn't mean, you know, there is a time for fried chicken, and there is a time for that beautiful pepper steak with the whole preparation and the pageantry of tableside cooking. And then as far as dish preparation goes, you really, I think there is an element of, I mean, they always say in the industry, I mean, 72% of people eat with their eyes. So, I mean, you have, for sitting in that, whatever, that $300 chair, you also have to, you know, you offer something, an experience, a visual experience, a taste experience. I think the nuance of taste has to be a little more intricate. I don't think it can be one-dimensional. I think it needs, you know, great balance. And I think you need to really give them something to go along with that, you know, will match the hospitality of your restaurant and the service and the entire environment.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let me remind our listeners at home that you can actually call in and ask questions for Jonathan, Mark, me, or anyone here by dialing 718-497-2128. That's the number at the Heritage Radio Network studio. You can also write us an email at info@heritageradionetwork.com. And if you're one of the thousands of people who are listening to this as a podcast on iTunes, and there is someone's phone ringing right now, it might even be mine. But if you're listening to this as a podcast on iTunes, you can tweet us at Taste Matters HRN, and if you send us a question, we'll try to address it on air or directly on Twitter. So let's step back a second and explain this whole Relais and Chateau thing, because it may be more common, I think, in other countries or other parts of the world. This is an international, global coalition, really, a program that unites small, elegant, elevated hotel and restaurant experiences around the world. Anything else to say about that, Mark? Like, what are you a part of?
Well, I guess it pretty much assures people of a certain level of service and a certain level of amenity, and they can sort of trust in this guide that anywhere they are in the world, you know, one of these 600 plus properties, you can pretty much be sure that there's a certain level of service and again amenity that you can expect.
Yeah. and they're everywhere in the world, pretty much.
Sure.
From I see. And coming up, one of the reasons we decided to talk about this is you guys are having a gathering here in New York on the 16th of April, the Dîner des Grands Chefs. Obviously, Relais and Chateau is or originates in France. It sounds like it's a French French phrase, but this dinner of great chefs, 35 chefs from around the world. More 45, and what you know, you're all going to be in this room together, 45 chefs from around the world. What is that like? I mean, what do you have in common? What's besides the fanciness of the experience, let's say, like, is there something that you guys would think in your head that you have in common, that you, I mean, we live in this global world, what's this about?
I mean, something that I'm personally looking forward to is the fact that people that have sort of risen to this level of organization tend to be much more focused on the guest and the guest expectation and what it is that they want, rather than the sort of the art of gastronomy or doing things. You know, that are more ego driven. It's more about the guest and providing. I mean, really, as far as I'm concerned, in regards to hospitality in general, the only thing you really need to know is that you're absolutely not allowed to ever let a guest leave dissatisfied, and that's sort of regardless of any and all perception they might have. So you sort of have to tailor the experience to them, and it's sort of putting the chef aside, at least from an ego perspective,
sure,
and focusing more on the experience of the guest and giving them what they want rather than what the chef wants.
So that
and
runs.
I think most of the people in this organization understand and respect that.
Would you agree with that, Jonathan?
Oh, 100%. I mean, it was well said. I mean, really, whatever. I mean, the mantra is here. I mean, really, whatever the guest wants, the guest gets, and that's the true guest experience.
And that would certainly run counter to the fuck you guest trend, exactly, which we do exactly, see emerging.
Exactly.
Well, that when Mark made that comment about the hipster restaurant, I know that's an issue we have here in Toronto, which is that most, you know, that kind of service is alive and well and thriving in Toronto, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back, and we're going to pick up a more general conversation about what's exciting you guys about food.
Sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards and Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, pit-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
So welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm Mitchell Davis. I'm talking with Relais and Chateau chefs Mark Ladner from Del Posto here in New York City and Jonathan Gushue from Langdon Hall outside Toronto. And the music that we've chosen for this segment that Mark has chosen, of course, will really test what side of the coin you fall on when it comes to this conversation about lavish hospitality and luxury, because, of course, it's the theme song from Downton Abbey. And Downton Abbey and our enthusiasm, my personal enthusiasm and everyone's, I think, may be an indicator of where we are standing or some tension in this conversation between the casualization of the world and our fascination with this incredibly more lush and extravagant world than we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about that, Jonathan? I mean, you work in Downton Abbey pretty much. Like, what do you think?
I think, I mean, you're seeing a bit of it. We are getting more people in that, you know, are coming more frequently. And what is nice is we are getting a different group of people that really look at it as, you know, an event for themselves. They really appreciate the whole picture of it. You know, from the 35 to 40 somethings, mm-hmm. that is a bit of a change from, you know, the actual, you know, the opulent wealth that kind of places like this are known for. So I think there is a nice change, and I think that foodie environments help that people are looking for the entire experience, and you know, our guests are more knowledgeable now on a whole.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's again, experiences like this will always be here, you know, and the casual, the up and down casual hipster restaurant, you know, that will come and go. But mm-hmm. I mean, you know, what we do and what Relais and Chateau does is not going anywhere.
Right. Well, and we do forget that these things come in trends, come in waves. I had a wonderful dinner the other night with some colleagues at the Four Seasons restaurant in New York, and there's a restaurant more than 50 years old that ushered in a certain era of opulence, kind of uniquely modern and American opulence in restaurants 50 years ago, and has had its high and low points in terms of its relevance to what was happening in the moment about food and dining, but remains this level of almost giddy New York excess in some ways.
I mean, it's one of the most magnificent rooms there probably has ever been. I mean,
yes, right.
Imagine the value of that Picasso tapestry. I mean, I can't even.
Yeah, well, and I mean, in fact, I've actually run these numbers. It remains the most expensive restaurant ever built. It was built in 1959 for $4.9 million in 1959 dollars, depending on how you rate it, is $140 million today. No one could ever build a restaurant like that. But even there, they talk about the owners, Alex von Bitter and Julia Nicolini, talk about how at a certain point in its life cycle, what they have, even though it seems so classic and timeless, was out of date and old, sure. and people didn't want to come. But sure. if you can just stick it out long enough, like you were saying, Jonathan, everyone comes back. Mm-hmm. And we come back to these things in a different way, I think. I wonder if you could talk, Mark, because you've instituted this really neat evening experience, this mm-hmm. this idea of the colazione. And mm-hmm. you want to explain that for people at home?
It was just this very, very extravagant dinner that was a little bit... sort of ego-driven, but also intended to sort of help the staff better understand the capabilities and the capacity that a restaurant like ours, with the amount of resource and amenity that we have at our disposal, like what we could actually really do with it if we tried to choreograph a really opulent, really extravagant dinner that wasn't taking into account, you know, dietary restriction, which has become like a tremendous issue, probably one of my biggest challenges
really?
In the restaurant right now. So basically, I just made this meal that was intended to be, you know, very, very well thought out, where each course, you know, worked in conjunction with the following course and the one prior. And then the beverages also were all very carefully chosen, but I also wanted to introduce, you know, implements of service that maybe not everyone could afford to enjoy, because I only bought, for example, four of these things, so that I, as a self-defense mechanism, so I wouldn't have to do too many of these
right.
these tables. But the idea was to sort of, you know, take rather than trying to create or buy a newer object for presenting a particular item, dish, or course, we preferred to repurpose classic design and sort of explore the different ways that it could perform for us in sort of counterintuitive service.
A vintage, beautiful dish or serving plates or some sort of piece that came to the table filled with your food. I mean, although you actually did work on a specific menu and specific dishes for the experience. So a real integration of the object.
And we also performing every course tableside
wow.
as well. So, I mean, it was a tremendous effort on our part. I mean, I had to spend essentially, you know, 3.5 hours just on this one particular
table
yeah. going from, you know, one course straight into the next. But it was a really valuable exercise. I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about sort of how to read guests, because again, you know, at this price point, part of the exercise was trying to ascertain from a guest pretty quickly, like how much information they wanted, how much time they wanted, or not at all. And that's entirely their prerogative, you know, and that's an important part of what we do.
So we have a question actually from someone listening, and I think it pertains to this conversation and something I want to explore a little further. And it's pretty how-to. It's like, what's the best way each of you think for customers to give you feedback these days with blogs and tweets and all that sort of stuff, which seems so one-sided and oddly driven? It's sort of feedback by ransom or something, extortion in some ways. But do you like to hear what, I mean, I imagine both good and bad, but Jonathan, how about you? What is the mechanism for guests to tell you how they're experiencing what you're doing?
Well, we provide them with kind of an email evaluation that they can provide. And I think that, I mean, it's very valuable for us. I mean, we break down each department of the hotel and try to analyze, or even better, we get them to analyze their experience and
right.
kind of convey how they felt about it. And it's been very valuable for us, and I mean, we don't like hearing negative feedback, but I mean, you really do. You learn a lot from it, and you do react. I mean, you know, we've had an incident recently that, you know, we've had to, you know, just tweak what we're doing and really push forward, and then now when you sort of get through it, it gets very exciting, you know,
right.
because you've got another challenge, and that's why we all do this.
And Mark?
I don't personally believe that blogging is necessarily the most constructive platform
uh-huh.
for voicing nearly always negative opinion. I would prefer that people just actually ask for what it is that they want, because that's what we're in the business of, is giving them exactly what it is that they want. So if they're able to communicate and ask for it, then the chances are they'll get exactly what it is they want.
So both of these answers and this whole conversation is illuminating something for me, and I hope for people listening at home, which is that this question of hospitality isn't actually about the tablecloths or the backs on the chairs or even the price of the meal, but about this dynamic between the wants and needs and experience of the person having in the restaurant or in the inn, and the relationship that that person is having with the people and the experience in the place, and sort of the levels where those line up and where they don't, and how the places where they don't, which sound almost more important, can be brought into the place where they line up. Like, so there's this interesting dynamic, a sort of a dance, I guess, to use it.
Well, it's definitely about economics. And for us, the idea is to try to better manage, for example, volume, so that you actually do have the ability to be micromanaging people's experiences by not being overwhelmed trying to deal with too many people at a time.
So fewer people means more attention,
right,
and a well-run organization. I mean, you said earlier,
and that's ultimately what you're paying for.
Right. It's time and space, you said. Right. In New York, certainly, and in Toronto and most of the world these days, the rarest of all commodities.
Right.
The food is every... Good food, fortunately, is easier to find, but...
Right. And the real estate of Manhattan as opposed to, you know, Bushwick, Brooklyn, it's very... very different.
Sure. And one of the things you notice when you walk into Del Posto is the expansive welcome. You don't see a table from the door. It's
opulent,
so opulent use of space. Almost feel that's what makes it feel somewhat like you're not in New York, that you just have to walk to your table.
Sure.
Yeah. What about you, Jonathan? How in an inn, I think there's a different relationship, even though I know certainly people come to Langdon Hall to eat, but you have them sort of at every point of the day. Does your staff work together to bring those two experience, the difference between the expectation what the guest wants and what you have to give together?
Very much. It's a very, I mean, I guess it's a symbiotic relationship, really, that we have to, I try not to think of it as kind of micromanaging people's experience, but essentially I think we do. I mean, we try and, you know, with regards to, I mean, you're familiar with our property, I mean, providing them, you know, comfortable places to sit around the lily pond, providing them with patio dining, also getting involved with our, you know, our Friday night suppers outside. Right. And just trying to give them all kinds of options with our, you know, our lounge, veranda, and then with our dining room that gets most of our attention. But even, you know, with our amenities in the rooms, I mean, we really, even upon arrival, I mean, we're offering, you know, fresh local fruit and things like that. So we really do try and, honestly, we do consider each and every step they take around the property and the way they spend their days. And I think, you know, it's that all-encompassing package of hospitality that you know, that really is where we do well.
And I guess in the last few minutes, thank you for that. Last few minutes, I just want to ask each of you if there are things you're seeing outside your own experiences, your own places, that are exciting you, that you're trying to somehow think about or work with, trends either in food or just in what you see around. I love the idea that, Mark, you're bumping it up a little bit with these dinners, trying to take it even more over the top. And Jonathan, you mentioned these Friday night dinners, which are these casual outdoor picnics almost, that are sort of coming down a little bit. But just anything right now that's exciting you that you see out there in this wonderful, delicious food world, Mark?
Well, I'm obsessed with casual dining, and the majority of my training and experience before Del Posto had come from the more casual dining segment of our industry. But I'm actually interested in going further and exploring, you know, QSR or quick service.
Oh?
I think that... I think the American public needs more, you know, healthful options in terms of fast food.
Right.
And I'd like to help them.
Huh. So take some of your values and your experience and translate that for more people, which is a nice idea.
What about make you? It tasty, but
right.
Healthful.
Healthful. Yeah. And what about you, Jonathan? What do you see out there that interests you?
I think it's funny. I think Mark stole my answer. just that thing. I think it is... I'm really, even if I try not to, I'm very drawn to the casual dining. But again, in trying to, provide people with, how can maybe in a different, in an additional environment, provide people with, great experiences. Even I find, I'm reading about food trucks now. Even I find that whole, even whether it's outdoor dining or street food, and just in those cultures. That do use it. I find that's what really interests me. But trying to parlay that into a great experience.
Well, I love the idea of a Relais and Chateau food truck. And in fact, recently I was walking, not too long ago, I was walking through Union Square and stumbled on Joël Robuchon in a truck handing me food. And I thought, wow, this is a new day. I mean, it was 3-star food truck food, if there ever was any. But maybe there's something there. To forget all of this other stuff and really concentrate on a very different relationship. Anyway, thank you both for being here.
Thank you,
have fun together in New York at this dinner coming up. I'm sure it's going to be a blast. Be a fly on the wall with all these chefs cooking in one place. That's April 16th, and you can go to the website relaischateauny.com, but you have to figure out how to spell the first part. And next week, we are going to welcome a very different conversation to the air, Marion Nessel, who is a great nutritionist, author of some wonderful and wonderfully influential books. In fact, she was chosen as one of the most influential food people in the world, is coming to talk about her new book, Why Calories Count, and we'll explore the relationship between taste and calories and all sorts of interesting things with Marion. Thank you for listening. This is Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis, every Wednesday at 11.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.